Welcome to Draw, Lose or Draw, a weekly podcast covering all things Partick Thistle. Joining me this week on episode 199, Rhys Haldane. Rhys, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Matt. I'm doing good, thanks. Like I say, it's good to get a Thistle win at any time, and it also helps when it's a long weekend. So I've been enjoying the time off work and happy days.
Jamie McDonald's here. Jamie, are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Matt. Always good, like Bruce said, have a Thistle win, get another clean sheet on board as well. Well, it wasn't exactly an all-timer of a game, so it's always good to get 3 points.
And rounding off our panel this week, he's been on the cans on the bank holiday Monday. It's David Forrest. David, are you in good spirits?
I mean, I've been on the cans on the bank holiday Monday, of course I am. But yeah, no, I'm doing well. Looking forward to talking about this absolute shit show of a game that we watched.
I'll stick with you, David, for the starting 11 question. With one change, Ben Stanway come in for Kerr McEnroy, which you can talk about. But maybe more importantly, EP asks if we enjoyed having a starting 11 with no follically challenged, I think he put it, players, and if the bald players who missed out on Saturday should be sent to Turkey.
I always feel bad about this because I have a decent head of hair. And I feel that you're very much, you know, the art of comedy is punching up, not punching down. I don't want to be too harsh on it, but I was quite happy with the team as it was. Stanway's obviously, he's kind of fallen out of the team recently, and it was good to see him getting a game. Inverness, obviously struggling at the moment. The team we've had has been working quite recently, so I had no complaints with it, but it is odd having a non-ball team. I'm sure Thistle Archive will be able to tell us, but I can't remember the last non-ball team that we had. Maybe during the run-in last season, but it's part of the furniture at this point, having a bald player on the team. So having a full head of hair on all 11 was a bit odd, I'm not going to lie.
I think it was quite late last season Bannigan shaved his head, so they might have sneaked in one or two before he did that. My hair's beginning to go a bit like Max out the tweenies, like it grows really thick around the back and sides, and then we're really sort of struggling on the top a little bit, but we'll monitor that situation. Rhys, we're quite glad that Ben Stanway came in for the first start in a wee while.
Yeah, I was, to be fair. I know it was kind of, I think Jamie mentioned that on the chat on the Friday night, or maybe it was early Saturday morning, that McEnroy wouldn't be playing. And I said at the time, I hope it's just a case of Ben Stanway's coming into midfield for a start. I didn't want to start tinkering things and move Macbeth back into the middle because he's been that good at the back. And it's like David said, Stanway's fallen out of the team lately. And I don't really think it's deserved, to be honest. I think Stanway's had a really good season. He came out of the team. His last start was the 2nd of January when we beat Queen's Park. And since then, obviously, the weekend there was his first start since, but we went on quite a bad run without Stanway in the team, and I thought like the times that he came off the bench, he was always pretty good, and we kind of missed that energy that he brought to the team. That being said, I was happy with the starting 11. I don't think Stanway necessarily had his best game at the weekend, but no, I was happy to see him back in the team, and of course, like we say, he's not starting in a while. He's not really been up to speed, so you need game time to get back up to scratch, and I'm sure that'll come if he needs to continue and keep his place in the starting 11.
Yeah, it was a sort of new role for him because we've, in the last couple of weeks, mentioned that we've tweaked the midfield. So it was Nielsen sitting deep on his own, and it was like McEnroy and Robinson more advanced. So Stanway was playing in that more advanced role. And I thought for the first sort of 25 or so minutes, he was a bit quiet, maybe struggling to get a grip to his new position. And I think it was actually his shot that we got the goal from, or Robinson scores the rebound. And after that, I thought he played really well for that sort of half hour. And I was surprised he got taken off, actually, because I thought he was one of the better players on Saturday. There weren't too many of them. Jamie, Tom Hosey asks, would we rather re-watch that game, or would you rather have your eyes picked out by crows?
I mean, Saturday wasn't, like, physically painful. So I'm going to go with re-watching the game. really fancy having my eyes pecked out. But yeah, as I said at the start, it wasn't exactly an all-timer on Saturday. And I think I mentioned it on Twitter, and I think I mentioned to you guys in the chat as well, that it reminded me of that game in the 21-22 season, so around the same time of season, against Dunfermline. Beat them 1-0 at home. First half goal, I think they were 9th at the time as well. Just kind of very similar vibes to that game. I thought neither of which were exactly fantastic games, but we managed to grind out an important 3 points in both games. And that's the sort of game, if you think a month ago or whatever, I feel we would have drawn that game. So it's an important one at the end of the day, as much as it wasn't exactly easy on the eye.
You've mentioned the Dunfermline one, Jimmy. It reminded me of the Pennycook one in the Scottish Cup about 5 years ago. It was just a brutal watch, I thought, especially in the second half when everyone else went down to 10 men. That was really the time we should have sort of taken the game by the scruff of the neck, and we didn't really, and that's when Inverness sort of were in the ascendancy. David, I take it you'd take the Crows.
Yeah, I mean, like, the second half is one of the worst halves I've seen in a long, long time, and bear in mind that it's basically become a catchphrase in this podcast to say this is one of the worst games of football I've seen in a long, long time. I thought that in the first half, I thought we were better playing against 11 men than we were against 10 men. We did have chances in the first half and realistically should have been out of sight by half time. But, you know, we didn't take them. And that second half, oh my God, like, just, it's like proper black tar heroin championship football. Like, it's just nothing there. I still maintain that, like, the championship is the worst level of football in Scotland, because the lower you get, they become part-time and you kind of excuse being bad. So it's kind of like, oh, well, you expect that at League 2, League 1. But in the championship, it's like, well, these are full-time teams and they're still this bad. Yeah, it was an absolutely dreadful game. I thought we were okay in the first half, but could not finish our dinner. And, you know, we deserved what we got in terms of as a spectacle, because we just could not put out of sight, and it was dreadful.
We maybe got what we deserved as a spectacle, but Rhys, do you think we deserved the 3 points?
I'm just in a wee bit of shock there at David's comments in the championship is the worst level of football in Scotland. I can assure you that that's definitely not true. If you go and watch some League Two or some Lowland League football, then you go and see a Thistle game after it, you start to appreciate what you've got. But no, I think we probably did deserve the win. Like it's been said already, I thought we were pretty dominant up until the red card, and then I don't know how, but, you know, sometimes the old adage is it's easier to play against 11 than it is against 10. But Inverness just came on to us at that point, and I thought we defended quite resolutely. We'd done all right, and yeah, we just defended and done what we need to do, which is actually pleasing. And, you know, coming into the playoffs, like these sort of racking up these sort of arduous 1-0 wins, it can be a good thing, just, you know, a bit more solid. I know the two clean sheets are against the two teams down in the basement of the division, but it certainly helps for the confidence, and, you know, guys like Macbeth and Muirhead and stuff, it helps them. So I probably would say we were valued for a win, but of course, it'd be nice to get a couple more.
I'm not sure I agree that we were valued for the win. I don't agree we were dominant in the first hour, to be honest. I thought we were sort of fine on the ball, but I thought Inverness had sort of some nice sort of passages to play to, and they kept the ball okay. I think we'll go on to some players who played well in a minute. We did well, I think, to keep Inverness at arm's length. Well, you would say especially when they had 11 men, but I suppose Mitchell didn't have too much to do in the latter stages of the game either. But the second half, we were so poor at keeping the ball. Jamie, I don't want this to turn into sort of a moan fest, because we did get 3 points. So who stood out? Who did play well on Saturday? Who were the individuals that caught your eye?
Luke Macbeth, I thought, was once again very solid at centre-back. I feel maybe say he's an easy answer to select, because he's slowly becoming becoming a fan's favourite, and he's doing very well in his role. But I thought he was very solid again, good in the air. Didn't put a foot wrong on Saturday. I thought Harry Milne quite a good game as well. Thought he was pretty effective. But yeah, there wasn't really too many standouts you could analyse as having their best game. But it, like Rhys said, it's pleasing that we defended in the end and managed to get the 3 points. I don't remember Inverness having too many chances apart from the one when Macbeth was down injured and came over to Cammy Kerr and he ended up slicing a shot wide or something. But I don't remember them having too many big chances. I think they did hit the bar in the first half, but that might be via deflection. I'm not entirely sure. But I think, to be honest, part of the reason I thought the game wasn't a great watch, I know you said you thought Inverness were good, Matt. I wouldn't say they were good, but I don't think they were terrible either. But I think the way they shaped up didn't exactly help it be a free-flowing game. They shaped up with six defenders on the park. They're playing a back five with Cammy Kerrison in front of them. And I think that kind of stopped us kind of playing the same football we usually would, and we're good at getting the ball out wide, taking on a lot of men, or just playing direct through the middle. I thought that kind of nullified all of that. So we had to, our goal came from a long shot, which then they switched off from. We got a rebound for them. You could see we weren't really cutting them open too much, I think, because of that shape. Even when they changed the shape in the second half, I think it was still kind of defensive minded, and I saw a lot of the fans were quite unhappy about that on Twitter. But it wasn't an all timer, like I've already said. But I thought we did enough to get the win. But I saw Duncan Ferguson after the game saying that he thought Inverness were fantastic and more than deserved the 3 points. I wouldn't say if that's class is fantastic, then maybe that's why they're 9.
Yeah, I don't think they were fantastic, but I don't think they were. I saw some of their fans react very angrily, and obviously I don't watch Inverness every week, but I thought they were sort of decent on Saturday, despite the sort of defensive team that Ferguson fielded. They did hit the bar from a set piece that sort of Mitchell flapped at a little bit. I actually want to give Mitchell a bit of credit. He had a couple of really good kicks. I think one in the first half to Fitzpatrick was excellent. That was really our sort of best move in the first half. I was going to say other than the goal, but that wasn't really a move. That was just a long shot we got the rebound for. But yeah, we're sort of scraping the barrel here. For praise, Aaron Muirhead, I think, deserves some praise because he's come in for a lot of stick this season. Luke Macbeth getting into the back four has really sort of helped him up his game as well, so it's good to see sort of solid defensive partnership form there for the first time, maybe for the first time this season. David, do you think we need to start playing better to prepare for the playoffs? Up on my Facebook memories today as we record, a year ago, we'd beaten Cove 5-0. I think the next game, we beat Queen's Park 4-0. And this was really the start of the run that ended up in Dingwall in June. Do you think performances are important now? Because it does look like we will be in the playoffs regardless. Do you think performance should be the focus of the next month?
Possibly. I mean, the problem with performances is there's only so much of that in your hands. Do you know what I mean? If you're playing teams that can sit up against you and stifle you, you can try as much as you like and it won't necessarily come off. I do think confidence is a lot of it. I do think that, like, you know, we'd went on a run where we'd not won in several, several games. I think our last win until the run was broke was, what, Arbroath on the 6th of January. So going from that to winning 1-0 games and grinding out results against 9th and 10th. I mean, remember last season when the reason we didn't win the league was because we couldn't win against 9th and 10th Cove and Hamilton. And the fact that we are grinding out the results will give confidence to the team. I think that when you get into the playoffs, it is about momentum. We'd all love us to play silky football and tan teams 4-5-0 every week. Of course we would, but realistically, that's not necessarily going to happen every week. I mean, we'd all take 1-0 wins until the end of the season and, you know, shithouse a playoff final win and go up on really stodgy Sam Allardyce, part of the bus, 1-0 Brexit ball wins. We'd all take it. But I think it's more about confidence in the performance. And the performance will come with the confidence. I think that if we're getting into a momentum of winning games, that will come, but we need to win games first of all. And you know, obviously Saturday's game against Dunfermline is really big for that.
We'll go on to the Dunfermline game in a minute, Rhys. I'll have another chat with you about Aidan Fitzpatrick. We spoke about him last week and his really well taken goal up at Arbroath. But I want to speak to you about maybe the Far Hill pitch. And in front of me where I sit in the Jackie Husbands stand at the Bing end, it was really bad. I think it's a historically bad area of the pitch with the canal nearby. Do you think that's affecting them? Because like 6 months ago, or even 3 months ago, I think taking Fitzpatrick off in a game that was that tight for a fullback with 15, 20 minutes to go would have been unthinkable. But on Saturday, it seemed fair enough because he was having little or no joy, really. He sort of drew the second yellow card at a Cammy Kerr, but he didn't really have an effect on the game. Are you concerned about the pitch? Are you concerned about Fitzpatrick at all?
No, I get what you're saying. The pitches, it does seem to be a bit of a problem. I know, kind of when you're looking at sort of general parts of the pitch, it can look fine, you know, when it's sunny and stuff, it looks green enough. But if you want to have a look at sort of, like you say, down towards where you are sat, or even in the goal mouth, it is a bit of a swamp. And I remember thinking back to, I think it was Morton, I think it was Grant Gillespie and Dougie Emery, they were just slaughtering the pitch and saying how heavy it was. And I've heard a few players saying that the pitch has been really heavy this season. And you think back to the weekend, there was a couple of times where, you know how dangerous Fitzpatrick is with both feet. And he shanked it into the John Lambie stand. And same with Scott Robinson, he had one early on as well, which he shanked into the stand. And, you know, these guys are capable of putting the ball in the box. And it's one of them where they're just looking at the turf kind of thing. So it must be a problem. You don't really know until you're playing on it. But I imagine that it causes players to tire, you know, when the pitch is heavy. And I remember, obviously, Fitzpatrick got subbed off in the 80th minute. But I remember they took the ball to the corner flag. And I remember thinking to myself, a bit early to be going to the corner flag. So that must have been about 7-8 minutes or so. So I reckon he must have just been shattered. And obviously, the pitch plays a part in that if you're sort of crawling through quicksand, so to speak. But like we said last week as well, I'm not really worried about Fitzpatrick's form because, you know, he's got 10 goals for this season. He can have an off day. So I'm sure it's nothing to worry about in that. But yeah, the Firhill pitch, it's wear and tear. The beginning of the season, it always looks good, but you get to this point and we've seen worse. There's no question about that. So both teams have to play on it. It's one of the ones you just need to suck up and get on with.
Anyone get anything else they want to bring up or mention about Saturday's game? No, it wasn't a classic. I don't think we've really rocked the world with any hot takes about a 1-0 win over Inverness there. Dunfermline away on Saturday. Jamie, do you expect an unchanged team against Stanway to keep his place, or anyone pushing to dislodge anybody in the starting 11 for Saturday?
I wouldn't be unhappy with an unchanged team, but I think if McEnroy's available, Dillon might bring him back in. Seems to have preferred that recently, so I wouldn't be shocked to see McEnroy come back in. But apart from that, I don't think there will be a change to the team. Did you also ask what the game is going to be like?
Yeah, go for it.
I think Dunfermline have definitely picked up. I think compared to where they were the first half of the season, they were kind of languishing around trying to avoid relegation, or at least try to avoid nine. But they're sitting in fourth now. They'll be looking, obviously, to 100% want to win this game, because then if they did beat us, they'd give themselves a pretty decent shot at getting fourth. I think if we win this, it's third is basically confirmed at that point. But yeah, I think it'll be a tight game. I'm not expecting either team to run away with it, but I think we should have enough about us to win. I've never been overly impressed with Dunfermline this season. I don't think they're a bad team either, but I just think they're one of the kind of okay mid-table teams in the Championship. Obviously, they did beat us last time, albeit there was some very bad refereeing, but we still weren't good that day. But obviously, we beat them at East End Park earlier in the season, and beat them 3-0 at home, which was arguably one of our easiest wins of the season. Started the season, I think it was in the first quarter, but could be a different game. They've just made a couple of signings in January, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
David, another excellent episode of Travel Jags out today. Make sure you listen to that. Dunfermline famous, of course, for, I think you've claimed the best chippy in the league. I don't know if our growth has challenged that in recent years, but where's good to go in Dunfermline?
Yeah, so the Brig chippy, I've dragged you to it on multiple occasions. It is a fantastic chippy. I think because it's not a sit-in restaurant, it's a different vibe from the Bell Rock. But I love the Brig chippy. It is sensational. As well as that, there's a pub not far from it called the Wee Creepy Pub, which I'll always recommend to people. It is literally called the Wee Creepy Pub. It's a great pub. There's some great stuff on the sort of main street when you come back into Dunfermline Town Centre as opposed to East End Park. Me and Heather Holloway, we went for a drink or two after the game last time. So she stays nearby Dunfermline. But I definitely suggest if you're anywhere near the Brig, get a fish supper from the Brig, a pint in the Wee Creepy Pub. And just generally, the town centre is a fantastic place to kind of have a night out.
Reese, a much needed 3 points for yourself in the predictions table, calling a 1-0 win on Saturday. You can kick us off with a score prediction after your thoughts on the game on Saturday.
My thoughts, hopefully it's pretty similar to what we had last time up there. It's good to get a win there, a place we've not really had too much success as of late. As Jamie kind of mentioned, Dunfermline have came onto a game. I think they've struggled with injuries all season. Obviously, Cam Richie Hostler came back, and we've all seen that game against Dundee United on the telly where they looked really good. And if you could be excellent for him, he's always not really a goal threat, but he's a threat. At least he's a good player. So we're kind of hoping that these guys have an off day. I'm going to say we won't keep up the clean sheet run. I think Dunfermline will get a goal, but I'm going to say we'll have enough in the tank to get a win. We'll say 2-1 Thistle.
2-1 Thistle. Jamie, any advances on that?
You know what, I'm going to back us to keep a clean sheet. I said I thought it was going to be a tie game. Don't think our team are going to run away with it, but I'm going to say we win 2-0, a goal in each half.
Before I come to you, David, I think I'll back Jamie on that. David, you mentioned earlier you think the results are important, which obviously is the case. But just thinking back to last season, and I think I spoke about this on pods probably 3 or 4 weeks in a row, how it was like vibes were so important to getting us where we were. And I think it'll be the case again this season, because I think if you look at us this season, we probably are a weaker team than this time last season, certainly on the playoff run anyway. On paper, you wouldn't fancy us against Wraith or Dundee United, I don't think, over two legs. So I think we will sort of be relying on vibes again a bit. So I'm going to back us to sort of kickstart the vibe train on Saturday. Yes, goal in each half, Brian Graham to get one. 2-0 Thistle at the weekend. A feel-good game, because I think we need it, just, which is a strange thing to say off the back of three straight wins, but I think we need it. David, prediction from you?
I think you're right, but I'm going to go 2-1 Jags. I think that the law of the jungle is that if there are ex-players playing for another team, they generally will score against us. And my general affiliation for Alex Jakubiak is known very well, and I've heard that he scored some goals for Dunfermline this season, so I'm going to go, we'll go 1-0 down to Alex Jakubiak, we'll all have a good laugh about it, and then we'll win 2-1, so I'll go 2-1 Jags.
Part of Thistle women's team yesterday, I went up to Pierce Hill. It was a disappointing match, to be honest. The team were a little bit light. Rachel Donaldson and Demi Faulkner missed out in the match day squad. Rosie Slater and Amy Bullock started the game on the bench. I think Lindsay Taylor was started at centre-back with Jenna Ferguson, who's the Rangers loanee. And I thought they actually both did pretty well. I think they were quite light in midfield. I think Bullock was a miss. Faulkner's always a miss from the back line. And they never really got going against Hearts. So to be fair themselves, I don't think played brilliantly. Like, I've seen Hearts a couple of times now this season. I've definitely seen them play better. Wasn't the best game of football I've ever seen. I think 3-0 was maybe a little bit harsh, but the women's team never really got going. Although, as advertised last week, I did enjoy the excellent scran up at Peters Hill. So make sure you get along there before the end of the season to enjoy that and to cheer the girls on. Hopefully they can get a much-coveted win against one of the top three to sort of top off another successful season. I think some of those players missing will be back in the starting 11 very soon. Celtic up next, though, so that'll be another tough game. Episode 200 of Draw, Lose or Draw is coming soon. So I'm going to ask you all, if you could pick two guests for episode 250, hopefully we've got another 50 episodes in the tank. You can have one Thistle-related guest and one other. Who would you choose? David, I'll leave you till last because we did choose the guest for episode 200. So Jamie, I'll come to you first on this one.
Someone Thistle-related. Obviously, I remember saying to you guys, I'm trying to get like Higgy on over and over again back in the day, but it never happened. So he'd probably be the go-to just because I'd want to talk to him. But, or you could go someone like Jason Banton or something, ask him and what it was like to train with the squad for 4 months or whatever it was and play a couple of youth games. But a non-related Thistle person, come back to me on that. I want to think of a good one. I don't want to just put a stupid answer.
Okay, Rhys.
My Thistle-related member would have to be Brian Graham. Now, I know that's probably kind of pretty boring answer, but I just love his honesty. Like, I love listening to him, and you probably all heard from his interviews, he always goes, if I'm being really honest, and then he'll say that every interview, but I just think he's really good to listen to. I remember listening to Plugging, I know it's a bit late now, but Plugging the Cup Final podcast that we done, and David obviously interviewed him on that. And he was kind of slaughtering Tam O'Ware, which I thought is nice to see that. It's good to see that from a professional footballer because they're also so media trained where they don't say stuff. They don't want to say this, they don't want to say that. And fair enough, because it might hamper something down the line. But Brian Graham's, he's done enough in the game. He's at the stage of his career where he obviously feels like he can say whatever he wants. And I love that. So he would be my option for the Thistle-related part. In terms of the non-Thistle-related, Is it dead or alive, or can I go?
If it's a good dead one, we'll allow it.
Well,
Controversial, but I would have Michael Jackson, but I don't know if that's a good one. I know some people aren't too keen on him, but he would be my go-to. I think he'd be brilliant and he'd have plenty of stories as well.
Rhys, draw loser draw, thanks you for your contributions to the first 199 episodes.
David, I would love to hear Michael Jackson's thoughts on Cowdenbeath in the Fog from the 12-13 season, or like what's your favourite, like, you know, David Mitchell slip up or something like that. I think I'd get hours of content out of asking Michael Jackson questions that he's been mused about, but you know, sadly not.
David, if we're still playing this game in 50 episodes time, what will be the first thing you ask Matthias Pogba?
I mean, you've absolutely stolen my answer straight away, genuinely. I mean, if we get Matthias Pogba on, I think that would be it. I think genuinely that would be like done up the road. Like, fine, we've not interviewed Archie, you know, we've not had a good sit down with Bannigan. All right, those are fine. But if we get Matthias Pogba on, I mean, it would be 9 hours. Let's be honest, the pod would be so long because I just have so many questions for him. I think, yeah, he has to be the answer. I'd love, if anyone wants to get us in touch with Matthias Pogba, please do, because frankly, I'll take the legal battle. I'll take the risk on it. I'd love to have Matthias Pogba on there. In terms of non-Thistle related people, I know, Matt, you're a big fan of this as well. Here Comes the Guillotine, the podcast of Frankie Boyle and Susie McCabe. But Christopher MacArthur Boyd as well. I used to know him when he used to play in shitty grindcore bands in the 13th Note. And I think he's just a very, very funny person. And I think that we would get good content out of Christopher MacArthur Boyd on here. I mean, he's perfectly gettable, but at the same time, you know, he's out of our sphere in terms of relevancy when it comes to Partick Thistle podcast. But yeah, Matthias Pogba and Christopher MacArthur Boyd, I think, would be a sensational pod. And I'll start on work on getting them both on for 250.
I don't know if you've listened to any of the 199 episodes that you've edited, David, but relevance to Partick Thistle isn't a factor at all. Jamie,
I just want to know what he thinks about the elephant.
No, I think he's gettable. We've got 50 episodes. What's that? Maybe a 9 months, a year to work on that. Jamie, you got an answer?
I think of a couple of things. You could go for someone just entertaining to listen to. You always hear like Jack Black get interviewed and he's always like very entertaining. So I feel he'd know absolutely nothing about Partick Thistle, but he'd still be entertaining to listen to on the podcast for an episode. Or you could just go all out, which is Michael Jackson's suggestion, made me think. You just go for like the most insane guest you could get and then like wheel in like Donald Trump or something on the Partick Thistle podcast. So it'd be interesting, no matter who you pick.
You two are really outing yourselves here. Rhys and Jamie, Donald Trump and Michael Jackson discussing Dunfermline versus Partick Thistle. Obviously, I've said before, Alan Archibald's the dream. I think he'd be my Thistle-related one. Hopefully, Derek McInnes can give him some time off over the summer. And I think non-related, Peter Capaldi, I think he'd be great chat. Obviously, we've got a lot of Doctor Who. I see a lot of Doctor Who fans, probably about three in our listenership, but you know, they're the most important ones. And I reckon he'd have a soft spot for the Jags as well. So get Peter Capaldi on for 250.
I was trying to avoid Doctor Who suggestions, but the real answer is David Tennant. I'd love to talk to David Tennant.
I think he hates football. I know he
did. I don't think he likes Thistle then.
Yeah, that's true.
He filmed it for Hill for Single Father.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, well.
Just mean I'm going to have to watch Single Father at like a dissection pod in like episode 212 when we're trying to bump up the count.
Yeah, David Tennant's my new answer.
I was going to say, the second that Rhys said like dead or alive, I was one of two ways. I was like, he's either going to come up with something like Mozart or something like that. Or I was like, maybe Tupac. Like, Tupac could be good. But then again, is he dead or is he alive? That's what the subject of episode 200 is. Is Tupac dead or alive? And is he a Jag? But I don't know. I think getting Tupac on the pod would be good. I'll see if my contacts in Fiji.
Get Elvis on. Dead or alive. Elvis is living on the moon anyway. So get him down.
I'm going to Vegas in a couple of months. So you never know. We might have Elvis on.
This episode 250, no matter what one of these varied routes we decide to go down will be nothing compared to episode 300, where I finally get to grill Larry Silverstein about those insurance bonds they took out over the World Trade Center. That's the episode we've all been waiting for.
I'm going to put it in writing here, or on audio, a verbal contract here. If we get to episode 911...
Is Larry Silverstein still alive?
I mean, he's got, 712 episodes to kind of, you know, kick the ball into the corner flag until we can get him on.
Larry Silverstein's still alive and he's 92. We might have to really sort of start padding the episode count to get to episode 911 within his natural lifespan. We will finish this longer than I was thinking it was going to be 10 minutes ago, but still quite short podcast, as we always do with Partridge Thistle. As you heard last week, I was a bit under the weather, missed the Arbroath game, and then it was actually off work for a few days at the tail end of last week. Wasn't all bad news, though. On Friday, in one sitting, made it through Peter Davidson's final Doctor Who season, which is 6 stories, 5 of which are 90 minutes. So it's a lot of Doctor Who. So my question is, what do you do when you're off work sick? David, again, going to leave you till last year because it's probably a sort of essay you've got prepared for this one. Reese, what's your sort of go-to when you're off work and not feeling so great?
Obviously, lie in bed and just sleep with a blind shut all day and don't do anything because I should be at work. No, in all seriousness, I can't give my 100% truthful and honest answer just in case, you know, I'm pleading the David Forrest on this one, but... I always remember, I know it's not really work, but it's school. I always remember coming home from school sick one day and just binging the final season of Breaking Bad. Like, just I must have been like S4 at the time or something, fourth year. Just came home and finished Breaking Bad, and that was just a great day, just sitting rattling episode after episode. But I've done other stuff, of course, when I'm off sick, but I'm not prepared to divulge at this point in time for legal reasons.
Jamie, I don't know what Doogie Emery's like as a boss with this sick leave policy, but what do you get up to when you can't make it into training?
Took me a second to get that out of Doogie Emery.
How does it take you a second to get it?
Been in my doing head, it for about Jamie 3 years. Jamie McDonald is still at Rafe Rovers in my head.
Okay.
And I'm like, nah, Ian Murray is my boss, but he is at Morton. I just keep forgetting this, but that's taking a big U-turn. I don't do too much, but would you watch TV, YouTube, that sort of thing? I don't really, nothing too exciting, to be honest. And I would say this is a boring answer, but I'm sure, you know, David will save us with some insane story, I'm sure.
Yeah, David, what pyramid scheme takes up your time on your sick leave?
I mean, like, you're unwell, aren't you? I mean, the honest answer is I just sleep all day. Like, you know, when I was sick in June during the Dingwall final and I had to watch it on the couch, for example, I just slept until about 10 minutes before kickoff and then got up and watched the game and set an alarm, whatever. I do, much like most people, you watch TV when you're unwell. I have 2 series I always go back to when I'm unwell. Black Books is number one. Every time I'm unwell, I'm at right that sign. I'm just binging Black Books for the day or two that I'm off. Or Spaced, the Simon Pegg classic. Those are my comfort food TV series, where if I'm ever feeling a bit shitty, I will just watch those instead of doing anything whatsoever. But the boring answer is that I know you're expecting me to go, well, actually, to make myself feel better, I go like cliff diving or like, you know, rappelling down like tall buildings. But you know what? I once get caught throwing a sick day going to a gig when I went to the train station and my boss was at the train station and then brought it up in my return to work the day after. So I generally am very boring on my sick days because I don't take sickies anymore, and you know, I don't want to get caught, you know, being outside when I'm actually genuinely unwell. So yeah, usually in bed or watching Black Books.
Well, it'll be absolutely fascinating to listen back to this and hear what does make it. Thank you if you've made it to the end of this strange episode of Draw, Lose or Draw. We will be back in the coming days with episode 200. And then, of course, we will be back later in the week with our usual review of the trip to Dunfermline and previewing Wraith Away. In the meantime, stay safe.